Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the Stage Right Side. I've got my mug here with some coffee in it so that I'm fun and interesting. Sip, sip. I do hope you all had such a beautiful week. I am very excited because we're going on tour. We leave on Sunday for a tour back to California. We're going to Costa Mesa. We're performing at the Segerstrom Arts Center. So please come see me dance. I'm performing on March 4th evening and Sunday, March 6th in the matinee. And I'll be dancing the role of Polixenes in Christopher Wheeldon's A Winter's Tale. So I play this character. He's besties with Leontes, who's the king of Sicilia, and I'm the king of Bohemia. And I'm like, you know, a cool guy, bohemian, what have you. And we're besties, and then he has this whole, like, jealousy moment where he thinks that I'm shtupping his wife. It's not true, I'm not. And, you know, I'm trying to play it like I'm this sort of, like, bro-y guy, but, like, I'm always really super focused on Leontes. I'm trying to give it queer subtext, if you will, even though my character's quite butch. But, you know, there are butch gays out there, believe it or not. You know, few and far between, but they're out there. Okay, so keep your eyes peeled, hunty diva, yes. So come see me perform. Come say hi at the stage door after. And, you know, it'll be really fun. My cast is crazy. Like, it's Cassie, Cassandra Terneri, Herman Cornejo as Leontes, Skylar Brandt, and Jake Roxander all round out the cast of Principals. It's going to be fire. So do please join me at the theater. All right, I got that. What do they call that in podcasts when you, like, get the talking shop out of the way or whatever? Like house cleaning or whatever? Cleaning house? I don't know. But yes, do come see me dance. Vive la danse. And I hope you're all enjoying my set. I feel like I'm not quite framed up well today because I'm by myself. My assistants took the day off. Rude. But I'm very happily here in my second bedroom converted into podcast studio. It's good stuff. More coffee, please. So I also wanted to talk about, I really love it if you guys could leave comments on, like, Spotify and stuff so that I can answer your questions live on the air, which is very fun for me. I have a great, the question horse prompt is all about school and my training, and I got some really interesting questions that I can't wait to bring to you on the back of the question horse. So stay tuned for that. But do rate and recommend my podcast. My challenge for all of you Stage Right Side listeners out there is to recommend this podcast to at least two people. And don't forget that it's on YouTube as well. So if you want to watch me talk about God knows what, find me on YouTube. Or, you know, listen on Apple or Spotify or whatever you want to do, because it's your life and you are in charge. Gag. Okay, I want to talk about the question horse, because I'm really excited about some of these questions today. So take it away, question horse. Where are you? Come on. Yoo-hoo. Whistle, whistle. All right. I took to Instagram to ask everybody what they wanted to ask moi in regards to my training and everything. So I'm going to just pop into these questions. I think they're really interesting. Mitch Daedels. I love pronouncing... the handles. Mitch Dadles. Okay, sure. How was your time in BB2? So I was in Boston Ballet for 10 years before joining American Ballet Theatre. And I was in Boston Ballet 2 for 1 year. And I auditioned. I didn't really even audition. I did the summer program in Boston Ballet in 2002. And I was offered a contract with the Apprentice Company out of the summer program. I wasn't first pick. I think I was like third or fourth pick from the summer program. But the previous picks already had positions elsewhere and were going to either continue training or start professional work elsewhere. But I had 1 year left of high school to do. And I remember asking my mom, like, hey, should I take this contract? Like, what do I do? And she was like, I don't know. Why not? She was like, you don't really try in school anyway. And she wasn't wrong. So I joined Boston Ballet 2 at, I got the contract when I was, I think, 17. And then I started when I was 18. And I finished high school through a correspondence. Like, I would send tests and things in the snail mail and, like, do open book worksheet type stuff to a school called the American School, which I, to this day, I don't know if it's real. And I got my, I think, like, GED or something. I don't know. It's all a blur, and I don't remember it. But, yeah, my time in BB2, it was 1 year. It was, like, we would do lecture demonstrations and school performances, and we'd be, like, dancing in, like, an elementary school cafeteria at, like, 9 a.m. on a Tuesday. You know, it was, like, doing Napoli at 9 a.m. on a linoleum floor on a Tuesday. So no wonder my knees hurt. You know, it could be that and all the, like, 2012 Instagram cement photo shoots that I did. But BB2 was great. It was such a crash course for me in professional life. And I had a lot of amazing people to look up to at that time in Boston Ballet. There were dancers there that I really admired. Like Paul Thrussell was a hero of mine at that time, and Larissa Ponomarenko, and Simon Ball and Yuri Yanowski. There were so many exemplary dancers there at that time that really showed me what it was to be like a leading man in a ballet company. So I was greatly inspired, and I feel like I improved a lot in the first year under the direction of Raymond Lukens and Mikko Nissinen, who's still the director there. Was the director of the main company. And I just worked my little tuchus off. And after that first year, I got my contract was renewed as an apprentice. And, you know, it can go any number of ways. You can get a corps de ballet contract after 1 year. You can get rehired as an apprentice for another year as an apprentice. Or you can get let go. So I was sort of middle of the road. I was very happy to get a contract. I didn't really expect to be promoted to the corps de ballet after my first year because it was pretty customary at the time to do 2 years as an apprentice. But I signed my BB2 contract for year two. And about a week before we started, I got a voicemail from the director's, like, right-hand person, Liz Olds, and she's like, call me, and I called her back, and she said, how would you like to be a corps de ballet member this year? We have a dancer whose visa was not accepted, and we need another corps man, so are you interested? And I was like, well, are you on crack? Duh. And I don't know, jumped out of my skin and was super excited, and and that's how I got into the corps. So I did 1 year of apprentice work, like, you know, all the stuff. I did some, like, fun stuff in that time, too. Like, I was a goon in The Prodigal Son. I was, like, we did Romeo and Juliet, and I had a sort of, like, bit part where I got to, like, do some featured dancing as an apprentice, which was very, very cool. I think it was Rudy von Danzig's Romeo and Juliet, maybe. But what do I know? It has been 700 years since then. But yeah, I never wasted an opportunity to be seen. I was pretty obnoxious and eager, to say the least. All right, this question is from Caden Milton. I can't quite read my computer. And they asked, is 16 too late to start ballet? Oof, let's unpack that. So 16 is late to start ballet, but too late? No. Calvin Royal III is a principal dancer with American Ballet Theatre. Calvin started dancing at 14, if I am correct. You know, it's very difficult to get your body to do the things that ballet requires of it when you start late, because your body sort of settles. And when you're a kid, you're malleable and Gumby-like and sort of impossible to break. So, you know, if you're, I don't know if this person who's asking me this is 16 and wants to start ballet, to which I say, stop asking me and do it. Get to a studio and, you know, I don't know what you need to do. Try to get a scholarship or, you know, if you have money, pay for it. But yeah, it is late, but it's not too late. All right. So there we go. All right. This question is from Regal1117. That's a lot of ones. After healing from injury, are you always conscious of that part of your body when dancing? 1 million times, yes. Absolutely. And it's not just when dancing. It's when I'm sleeping. It's when I'm walking to the restroom. It's when I'm going up and down stairs. I will have this consciousness until I am dead. When your knee explodes on stage, it's bound to haunt you. So yeah, I'm hyper aware of it, and I work really, 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 really hard to keep my body functioning. And I've done a lot of work and continue to do a lot of work to be able to do what I do at a level that I can still be proud of. So yes, it's very difficult. I don't recommend it. I'm going to take off this absolutely gorgeous blue sweater from Todd Snyder, which is a menswear brand. Beautiful stuff. You know, ladies out there, if you want your husbands to be attractive, go to the Todd Snyder website and buy them some clothing. It's gorgeous stuff. And it's not cheap. It's not like, you know, $20, but it's not like, you know, Balenciaga, if you will. I don't know how much Balenciaga is. I feel like the more syllables there are in the name, the more expensive it must be. So that was an interesting question. That was mildly triggering. All right, this one is from The Woomama. The Woomama. Was there ever a moment you wanted to quit? How did you power through? Yes, there was. Hold, please. I'd say when I was like 15, 16 or something, and I was a high school student, and I watched all of the people at my high school being teenagers, and I missed out on a lot of that experience because every waking moment when I wasn't at high school was at the dance studio. I danced at a studio called Devalda and Sirico Dance Center, and they had a youth company, they still do, and you know, we worked every day until like 9 or 10 p.m. And then on weekends, I would show up for like ballet class at 9 a.m. and then we'd be there until like 6 or 7. So I didn't really have a life outside of the dance studio. And it became so frustrating for me to see other people. This has continued into my professional career as well. What you have to give up to maintain excellence is so extreme. And you don't really get to have the life that the people around you seem to have, where they can go to like bridal showers and like, you know, take a vacation with their family and stuff. We don't get that. Like, even when we're on vacation, we still have to take class and keep our bodies correct and go to the gym and stretch. And it's damn near impossible, especially at my age now, to take time off, because the more time off I take, the more my body thinks I've retired. So, yes, I did want to quit when I was a teenager, mainly because I just wanted to party and be a teenager, because why not? All right, this question is from Cadine Milton as well. Favorite male dancewear lines? Are there male dancewear lines? I mean, not really. Things I like to wear, genuinely. I love the Keto stuff, that Australian brand. They have like unitards and shorts and stuff. And just, I love the actual Lycra they use is so soft and lovely. And then, you know, Yumiko, it costs you an arm and a leg, but I still have that stuff from like, you know, 15 years ago, and it's held up. And they're like panties at this point. Literal panties. All right, this question from Alexandria Marie Husky. What was your favorite role as a student? Favorite teacher? Favorite role as a student? I loved jazz. I wanted to do jazz exclusively. Ballet was like pulling teeth for me. And I just didn't feel good at it because I wasn't really very good at it. But jazz, I've had a confidence and like an awareness of my body that I could sort of live in. And so some favorite roles, like I had, there was a group number called Kids Get Hyped, which was like this methy, crack-a-lack, 90s electro house song. And my teacher, Steve, had sped it up into like a very, very crack-a-lack tempo. And it was like a bunch of 10-year-olds doing really, really hard dancing. I have to see if I can find a video of it, and I'll put it on the Stage Right Side Instagram. All right. So wait, I'm going to make a note of that because that's hilarious. See if I can figure out how to do that. Oh, I don't have internet. Great, 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 great. Cool, 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 cool. I'll have to remember that because my computer is not working, which is fun. So Kids Get Hyped was fun. I had a solo where I was like in sort of like nature boy rags, and it was a lyrical dance. And I remember like feeling really fierce at that. And I had some like ballet boots on, so I really felt chic. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like a lot of the times the costume was the ballet, the dance that I liked most was had the fiercest costumes. Okay, let's do like one or two more. I have so many responses from my Instagram prompt. I appreciate all of you submitting your questions, and I'm so sorry if I don't get to you. Okay. Oh my God, yes. So someone asked for the link for the documentary on YouTube, and I will absolutely do that as well. Sorry about that. I totally forgot. And someone said, Dreetown said, just wanted to say I love the voicemail from your mom so much. I watch that video a lot. So I have these videos in drag on YouTube. My drag persona, her name is Yoohoo Betch, Yoohoo. And I used to lip sync to my mother's voicemails. She would like leave me these rambling nonsense voicemails. And they were so funny to me that I was like, it would be really fun to lip sync to these. And so what I would do is I would get into what I called Nancy drag. I had this like short little wig, and I would put on like pajamas and get in bed and have like a cocktail. And I would lip sync to her voicemails, which I would just like put on the voicemail and sort of copy it in real time. Like I never learned them per se. And then I would adjust the audio to line up with the video. And yet they're very, very sweet and funny and weird, deeply weird. I have a very strange internet footprint. Let's just say that. Okay, let's do one more. All right. This is from General Catton. At what point did you realize this would be your career? Was there a shift in your training? Wow. I knew pretty much immediately that this would be my career. Like, it's very strange because I started as a child. I started at 9 years old. And I'd say, I don't know. It's hard to know what's, like, real anymore because I feel like I've told these stories so many times. I don't know what's real anymore and what I've, like, latched onto or just made up. But I always say, LOL, when I was 12, I've knew that I would be a dancer. You know, like I would try to make it in ballet and then like do Broadway or something. Broadway hasn't happened, but I'm not sure I want it to. So stay tuned on that. But yeah, I knew really young that I wanted to dance. I didn't necessarily know that I wanted to do ballet because ballet was very elusive to me as, I don't know, as an art form. I didn't like it that much. I didn't like doing it that much. But when I saw ABT as a teenager and I was like, holy freaking hell, that's what ballet could be? Like, what? Then I was shaken, like, to my core, and I was like, okay. I remember having conversations with my teachers, and they'd be like, you know, like, if you make it in ballet, you can sort of, like, do whatever you want. And they were fully correct, and that was excellent advice. And they were like, you look like you could do ballet. You know, just, like, physically, you look like you could do ballet. So maybe try. And I did, and I am grateful to their wisdom. Yeah, they were tireless in their guidance. Incredible people. All right. Oh, wait, I'll do one more. Okay. The last one, I promise. Oh, my God. Question Horse is slaying. Security Gypsy asked, your favorite performance with Boston Ballet? Go. You know, I was there for 10 years, so I had, like, I don't know, I have danced so many different types of things because I've danced for two companies and their repertoire is really different. So ABT has a lot of American classics and, you know, classical ballet. You know, like at ABT, it's like we have Twyla and Tudor and Mark Morris and Agnes DeMille and Limone, like, you know, like big American classics, as well as like the whole Ratmansky years, the 10 years of Ratmansky when I first joined, as well as, you know, the hits, Manon, R&J, Sleeping Beauty, Giselle, you know, all of those. So put that in a box for a second, and then let's go back in time. And my repertoire with Boston Ballet was Balanchine. Like, I was a Balanchine dancer for 10 years, you know? I got to do Divertimento number 15. I got to do Serenade, like every part in Serenade. Got to do Symphony in Three Movements, Symphony in C, Balanchine's Capella. Like, I there's so many. And that was really iconic. Like, I think maybe some of my favorite stuff to dance, like I loved doing Rubies. I danced that with Misa Kuranaga and Melissa Hoag. And, you know, I'm like kind of tall for Rubies. I feel like in other companies, it's usually like a Eddie Villella, you know, Daniel Ulbricht, kind of that sort of energy. And it was, you know, with my background, I just loved it so much. And same thing with Balanchine's Capella. Like, I feel like that was the first full length that I actually felt like I was good at. My first full length that I ever danced was Giselle. And I enjoyed doing it, but I didn't think I was good at it. And I have grown a lot in Giselle from years of experience. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say favorite performance. I loved doing Forsyth and Killian. Like, doing the second detail, I just felt like that bitch. If you haven't seen The Second Detail by William Forsyth, I just want to say anything Forsyth, please just go on the internet and look up some Forsyth, because it is in a category all its own. There are derivatives out the wazoo, but there can only be one William Forsyth. So do a bit of homework and take a look on the interwebs if you want to be inspired and shook by just the technical ferocity and vision of a person with a clear idea of what they're doing. Yeah, sorry, I really went on a memory lane moment there, but my time with Boston Ballet was so, I don't know, it feels like another life, and I'm just grateful for the roundness of my experience. I'm so lucky, you know? So I am grateful, suck on that. I think this is a great time to take a little break, and let's get back on the stage right side in a moment.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And we're back on the stage right side. I'm going to take one more sip of my coffee and then I'm going to talk about having a cold. I had a horrible, horrible cold. Not 1 week ago, but like a week and a half ago, like pretty much right after I recorded the last episode with Reed. The next day I was like, oh, sweet Jesus, I'm dying. I had like a crazy sinus situation. And I don't think I've ever sneezed so much in my life. And I have like a really ragey dad sneeze where you're like, can you shut the fuck up, sir? Please, sir, can you be quiet? And it was horrible. I was really not well for like a full week. I missed like 4 days of work. I kept trying to go to work and then feeling so bad that I would have to leave. And I'd be like, sorry, guys, like wearing a mask at work, like nerdcore 2020. And it sucked. And I feel so much better, but I still feel like I have a little bit of goo in my lungs. So everybody out there, do be washing your hands and try, you know, if you're not feeling well, stay home or whatever, wear a mask or do the whole thing. Do the whole performance art of being ill. But can we just talk about how much a Gatorade hits when you're sick? Oh my God, an ice cold Gatorade. I love give me Red 40. Red 40 is my penicillin. Yes, I love a Gatorade. I also want to talk about something that I've been experiencing like a lot more of in the past, I don't know, year or so. I live in New York City, okay? I'm a gay man. You'd think that I would just be like chilling, feeling safe in my own skin over here. But I've experienced situations of extreme homophobia on the streets of New York City recently. I'm not going to out these people, but I have a friend who was with their girlfriend. I was sitting on the street enjoying a coffee on a break. And I saw my friend across the street with her girlfriend. And they were having like a really sweet moment. They were like giving a smooch, like laughing, talking, like very affectionate and like absolutely touching. And this gentleman, I use the term loosely, starts heckling them, yelling at them, and threw a plastic bottle at them, and then proceeded to sit down next to them and just yell at them. So naturally they got up and walked away and left because that's scary to be harassed. And he was saying really awful homophobic things. And, you know, granted, this is at like 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. So I was like, sir, get a job. you know, maybe he was mentally unwell, but I've been experiencing a lot more of this type of energy in New York City. And, you know, I've been like weirdly scoffed at a lot. Like, you know, if I'm with other gay people and we're visibly gay, which is all the time, you know, I've had these awful sort of sneers and leers and scoffs that have been happening more frequently. So I guess maybe just remind yourself and the people you're with to treat other people as though they might be people. And be kind to one another and accepting of their uniqueness, their charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent. Yeah, it sucks. I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to make a joke out of it because it sucks and it feels terrible and unsafe. I don't want to feel like I'm going to get gay bashed in 2025. All right. I know that sounded like my gripe of the week, but it wasn't. It wasn't. All right. Let's do the gripe of the week. I wish I had like a cute little sound for the gripe of the week. Maybe it's like a baby crying. Excuse me. My gripe of the week is another New York City based wine, and that is texting while walking. You're definitely going to get hit by a car or a bicycle or a scooter or an e-bike, someone getting their pad thai delivered. You need to put your phone in your pocket while you're walking around, especially while you're crossing the street, diva. You're going to D-word. Okay, hunty. I'm very, very tired of people walking into me while looking at TikToks on their phone, while they're walking somewhere in New York City. That's mental illness. So that's my gripe of the week. Do with it what you will. Next time you cross the street, put your phone in your pocket and try not to die. Good advice, I think. I want to do reading, listening, watching, and I'm going to add something to this, playing, because I love video games. So I've read a lot of books, actually, in like the past 2 weeks. I read The Magpie Lord by K.J. Charles. It's sort of like it follows a sort of Sherlock Holmesy kind of energy. There's magic involved, if you will, and it's gay, which is super fun. It's quite sexy too. There are boners involved, and yeah, it was like smutty, but not like full porn. It was great. I enjoyed it. There are more in the series. I'm not convinced that I'll read the others in the series. I enjoyed it, but, you know, and this came as a recommendation from Tyler Maloney, who is an ABT dancer, and we love gay books. We're constantly swapping gay books. So The Magpie Lord by K.J. Charles, kind of sexy, fun. I enjoyed that very much. After that, I read The Witches by Roald Dahl. So Roald Dahl has been really inspiring to me as I'm working on a new book, and I'm trying to sort of take inspiration from the tone of Roald Dahl's books. So what I'm working on, which I don't want to talk about yet, I hope people can sort of see where my inspirations and I don't know, like where it's all coming from, because I love reading and I love magic and fantasy and all that good stuff. So The Witches by Roald Dahl, kind of spooky and crazy, but hilarious. And I had never read it. So a slay. I don't know if how many Stage Right Side listeners. I feel like the majority of my listeners are women, and they're, you know, around my age. So I don't know if any of y'all have kids out there, but if I were a kid and my parents wanted to read to me, Roald Dahl would be like number one. You know, once you get past a certain age and you're like done with Hop on Pop and One Fish, Two Fish, like Roald Dahl, you can serialize it overnights. And I really recommend any Roald Dahl. So get into it. So weird and quirky and kooky and fabulous. So I finished that. And then I am like, you know, 20% into another fantasy novel called Magic's Pawn by Mercedes Lackey. And this is a 1989 fantasy novel with gay protagonists. So let's have a moment for that. 1989 fantasy novel with gay protagonists. That is so fierce. That is so sassy. She better work, that Mercedes. I have to Google her because I know nothing. But I'm pretty sure this book has been awarded, you know, like Lambda Literary Awards or something. This is all worth Googling, which I haven't done. But I'm absolutely gagging for this book so far. I love it. Medieval boots, mama. It's giving like javelin, what have you. Really, really love. If you love gay stories and if you love fantasy and you love the 80s, get into it. That is Magic's Pawn by Mercedes Lackey. Slay. Okay, movies, movies, movies. I watched two movies recently that gagged me. Okay, so this is a Japanese release. It's called Godzilla Minus One. And it's basically like a post-World War II like character development story about the time after the war. But it's woven, it's like all with Godzilla sort of terrorizing Japan. You know, it, that's sort of like secondary in a really creative and interesting way. I loved this movie so much. I thought it was so full of nuance and just beauty, like the resilience of humanity and the sadness and the, it's just awful. When I think about what we're dealing with now, and then I think about something like World War II, and I think to myself, okay, I need to take a deep breath. So I shan't get into politics. We're not doing that. But this movie was fabulous. The score was fabulous. The visual effects were stunning and like so analog looking in a weird, in a good way. Godzilla Minus One. It's in Japanese, so you'll have to read. So reading is fundamental. But I can't recommend it enough. It was such a surprise. It was a triumph. And I also watched Flow, which was a Latvian animated film that won the Oscar for best animated feature. Beat out like Inside Out and others. I don't know. But it was so interesting. It was about this cat who, you're following this cat. There's no dialogue in the entire film. And one of the most unique things about this film is the animals in the film are not like, let's say, Disneyfied, like anthropomorphized. They're sort of like they just act like that animal would act. And they interact with other animals. And, you know, it is a movie, so this is not possible, basically. But it's like meta homeward bound, kind of. There's this huge flood that like destroys an entire ecosystem, like the world. There are no humans left. It's a post-apocalyptic moment. And you're following this cat who is trying to survive and meets all these other animals, and they're like helping each other out. And it's tense and very, very exciting and quite beautiful. And I heard or read somewhere, more things I don't actually know, that the whole film was created on like a free animating software. So it's just people with a dream and a hell of a lot of talent creating this beautiful story. And there are so many parallels, you know, with climate change and, you know, like, what is it? Climate migration and, you know, all the themes that you can really pick out and relate to. The different types of people and how they would react in a disaster. Very, very interesting, very beautiful, very fucking cute. Oh my God, cats, dogs, lemurs, capybara, and a very cute capybara. Yeah, check it out. It's called Flow. It was beautiful. It won the Oscar, so, you know, I don't know if you care. But it was, I watched it on HBO, on Max. So get into that, Flow, Slade. What I'm playing, Final Fantasy X. So Final Fantasy is an iconic RPG, which is a role-playing game. I'm playing this on my PS4, and it is, you know, it is a classic, and it's been remastered, and I have to say, I think it looks so ugly. Like, the remaster, I don't know what they did to these people's faces, but the faces in this video game, like, they all have, like, ginger minge shading, like Roxy Andrews forehead shading. Like every woman has a 5 o'clock shadow. It is wild looking. So that's been tough. I'm like, okay, so why did you remaster this if you're going to make it look worse, Diva? Okay. But it's kind of boring too. My friend Scotty recommended this to me. And, you know, I don't know if y'all like video games. I'm assuming you don't, because I don't know. I don't know why. I just feel like my listeners are not video game people, but I am. You know, I'm a boy of the 80s, so sue me. But I'm not really liking this game, so I might bail on it. I know that's sort of sacrilege because it's a classic, allegedly. And finally, what I'm listening to. I listened to two episodes. There have only been two episodes of Amy Poehler's new podcast. It's called Good Hang. And I love the tone of it. There's something, it's not manic. It's not manic like a lot of, you know, a lot of great podcasts like, you know, like Brittany Broski or Trixie and Katya, both of which I adore and listen to religiously. But I love, this is such an adult podcast. It's giving millennial, yes. The guests were Tina Fey, obviously iconic, incredible. And this week was Martin Short with Amy Poehler. And they just talk to each other in a, I don't know, their senses of humor are so chill. And it's like they're not trying to be crazy or funny. They're just talking to each other and they're very smart. So they have wit. And I really recommend it. I've really enjoyed it. It also, I relate to it a lot because they talk about performing a lot. And they talk about how they feel, you know, before, during, and after performances when, you know, they have stand-up shows or they're filming a TV show or something. And, you know, the relationship you have with people and how people expect a certain type of person. And it's funny, they said in this one sequence, they were talking about, like, Martin Short was talking about going on Letterman. And he was like, what I have to do is I have to go on the show and do, like, I have to basically do me playing myself. Because a lot of the time you can't not give because, you know, the work will dry up. And you have to go out and give the people the version of you that they're expecting. And I thought that was really relatable in performance and ballet because sometimes you feel physically unable or you are, I don't know, you're just feeling off or you're not feeling comfortable in a role and you have to present the version of you that people came to see. And it's very interesting because in that process, you become that thing. So it's not fake because you've somehow hyped yourself up into the thing that people came for. I don't know if that makes any sense, but a lot of the time I'll start a performance and I'll feel like, I can't believe I'm doing this. This doesn't feel good. And then as it continues, you just get into it and you become the thing that you're there to be, which is fierce, which is really fierce. All right, folks, I am just, I don't know what else to say. I think that's all I have to talk to you about today. I am feeling really grateful because people are really responding to this podcast. I don't know why, but I love doing this. I love the questions y'all have been sending me. They're really thoughtful and interesting. And I don't know. I've really been enjoying this and it's been helping me in this stage of my career where I've been doing this for so long and I have opinions and ideas and things, not all of which need to be heard, but I've enjoyed this very much. So thank you for coming back week after week. And I will try my best to do this with more frequency, to try to do an episode a week. No promises, no guarantees, but I will try. So thank you. And do rate this and try to recommend this to at least, you know, one or two people. Feel free to share it on Instagram as well and follow at The Stage Right Side on Instagram and I'll share some links and things. Thank you all. And, you know, since I'm alone this week again, I want to finish it out with another story about my mom. So, you know, you are welcome to go, but I really enjoy sharing stories about my mom. So here goes. I'm just going to keep going from where I left off. Chapter 2. In 1980, Nancy gave birth to another baby boy, whom she and Pat named Andrew. It had been 8 years since Robbie, the next youngest child, had been born. And this was obviously an accidental pregnancy. They had even talked about abortion. Shortly after Andrew's birth, Nancy lost both her parents to alcoholism and cancer. Cora and Robert left her with a whopping $500,000 in a trust fund that was managed by Robert's brother, Warren White. In her trust fund was a significant number of shares in an oil stock called Occidental Petroleum, where Nancy's grandfather had worked. He had bought shares and created trust funds for his grandkids. Per her grandparents and parents' wishes, Nancy would receive $150,000 per year, making her a millionaire by the mid-1980s. Pete, Nancy's eldest child, recalls her tearing open the mail voraciously, holding up the oil check and kissing it with glistening eyes. She and Pat bought a six-bedroom house of Gatsby-esque proportions, located in the Shorelands gated community and situated on a private beach on the Long Island Sound. This incredible Manhattan satellite truly was the home of a millionaire, and it reeked of old money. That August, Nancy and Pat returned to the family's country club to show off their adorable baby boy. Every upstanding family in Greenwich was a member of the Innis Arden Country Club, home to a golf course and a swimming pool. The Gills hired the head swim coach and pool director, a 22-year-old man named Stuart, who had just graduated from college, to teach their children how to swim while they drank themselves silly and partied with their friends. Pete, Missy, and Robbie, as they were known, were the real country club rats, getting into all sorts of mischief with their friends. They were independent little hooligans with a penchant for tricks and fun. So just, you know, I'm going to take a moment here. So this is in reference to my mother and her first husband and their children at this quite fabulous country club in Greenwich, Connecticut, called Innis Arden. And I don't know, we'll get to it, but I don't want to do a spoiler. But Stuart, the pool director, there's more to Stuart than meets the eye. Stuart was the up-and-comer, the local hero, the all-star. He held every swimming record imaginable at Greenwich High and was the all-American heartthrob that only the 1980s could produce. 6'3" with luminous blue eyes, a heroic nose, a trim russet beard, and a broad-shouldered swimmer's build, Stuart was the embodiment of that era's prime macho energy, a fetid jock with wit to boot. Nancy and Stuart saw each other every day at the pool. Soon they began to find ways to spend more and more time together. The hometown hero and Greenwich's number one housewife were walking a thin line. Whispers followed Stuart wherever he went. "She's so much older. Isn't he the kid's swim coach? He just got back from college. She just had another baby with Pat and lives at Shorelands. She's throwing away her life." But Nancy and Stuart didn't care, not one bit. They fell in love like only the forbidden can. Nancy and Stuart would go on drinking benders together, disappearing into the weekend and leaving little Andrew with the nanny. When Nancy would return, completely inebriated, she'd knock on Missy's door and want to chat. Nancy confessed the whole affair with Stuart to Missy one evening. Missy, who was 10, started locking her door at night. Nancy was on a quick path to becoming her mother, an alcoholic. The summer turned to fall, and the fall turned to winter. Pat could ignore the affair no longer. There was too much talk among the high society. He confronted Nancy and said calmly, "It stops now. I'll let it go if it stops now. Then we can move on." She cried, "Let's go to canceling. Let's talk about it, please." "No, it stops now. But I love him." She was head over heels. There was fire, passion, and intrigue. She couldn't stay away. Even in asking for counseling, she was prolonging the inevitable. The whole town was ablaze with the news. To this day, the older residents of Greenwich speak of the Nancy scandal, calling it the local news of the decade. Yeah, I'll give you one hint as to who my father is. Stuart, the pool director. So yeah, next time I will give you more tea on the origins, lol. Yeah, thanks for listening, and I hope you're enjoying hearing about my mom and all of that crazy stuff. And, you know, if you're down for a chuckle, listen to the voicemails on YouTube. I think you'd have to type in, like, Yoohoo voicemails from Nancy or something. Yoohoo is spelled U-H-U. All right. I hope you all have a beautiful week, and I hope to see you all in California. Those of you who live out there, please come see The Winter's Tale at the Segerstrom Arts Center. Tickets via the link in my bio on Instagram, and I'll see you at the stage door. Mwah! See you next time on the stage right side. Make sure to follow me at James B. Whiteside on Instagram and TikTok. That's James B. Whiteside. And don't forget to click the link in my bio to purchase tickets for upcoming performances or to buy my book, Center Center,
a funny, sexy, sad, almost memoir of a boy in ballet. Enjoy!
At Audi Columbus, we have the perfect luxury vehicle for you. Our award-winning service ensures a premium experience when buying or maintaining your car. The car buying process is entirely digital, whether you're buying online or in store. Right now, get a 2025 Audi A3 lease for $379 a month for 36 months with $3,725 down. Located by the airport, you can easily drop by or visit audicolumbus.com. Discover the service that sets us apart. Come see why it's better to buy at buyers. See dealer for details. Offer 331-25.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits apply to over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.